Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudley Wickham Ashby. And today I'm deeply humbled to have in my presence the reigning Calypso monarch of the National United Society's Calypso competition, 5-time champion, a finalist in the Pickety Crop Calypso finals, and a father, a leader within the disability movement, and so much more that we will learn about Mr. Granville Carter, Mr. DJ himself, in the Visions studio. Welcome to Visions, Granville.
Thank you, Ms. Wickham Ashby.
Okay, so what do we want to talk about first? Let's start by talking about your involvement in the Calypso arena. How did you get involved with singing Calypso, Granville?
Okay, first of all, let me say that music is something that I love very much. And I remember some years ago, it could be in the range of about 14 to 15 years. And I guess you would have known how this started when members of the National United Society of the Blind decided that we wanted to have this little fun Calypso in-house competition among its members. Mm-hmm. And so I remember when your name was the Mighty Hair Plat.
All right, Grandpa, don't let out all the secrets now.
So we started to put things together, and I think that is how it was born. And then after that, people started getting serious, meaning that people started to write. Went to other writers to write for them. And then people started getting their music all arranged, like how the average Calypsonian words for the Pickety Crop. And that's the rule. So then we first started at the Center for the Blind, and that could not accommodate us anymore. So then we went to Prince Cave Hall, and then we got a combo from the then Royal Barbados Police Force Band, which is now Barbados Police Service, and they started to be our backup band.
Okay, so you moved on then to getting involved with the Calypso tent and moving
into
the
natural. Started. And then it went, people like him and saw the potential there was in among the blind community, and he invited a number of us to come to perform or to sing in his tent, Super Gladiators. So it was Elviston Maloney, known as Size 2. Lisa didn't come, but it was Elviston and myself, and we started out in Super Gladiators. So the next year, it didn't like what was really happening, so I decided that I can seek to go a little further. So it is when then I approached Mrs. Sharon Carew White, and she had an audition, and I was accepted into the tent, and that's how it all evolved. And I was there from then until now, for the past 10 years.
Wow, that time has really flown by.
Exactly.
And I know last year was a very big year for you because you were part of the national finals of the Pickety Crop. So tell us what that journey was like for you.
Well, if I must revert a little, the 2 years before that, I was doing pretty well. And at the end of the Calypso competition, they do give you like your placement from among all the persons who participated. And I saw myself easily easing up into the 20s and stuff like that. And then the 1 year event in 2023, I was very, very close. It was just my foot to wet the water to get in. And then the following year, which was 2024, is when I worked really hard and to realize that I had gotten myself into the finals. I felt very elated. That was a great journey for me. And so the rest is history. And this year, I'm going to work a little harder or more harder than last year because I would like to repeat what I have done last year.
Okay, great. So, can you walk us through the messages behind your songs, especially the one from last year?
Well, every year there are a lot of issues in the country, and last year was a year that it was big news with a lot of things that were happening. There was obviously every year there's crime, and then there are issues with like the what was happening. So that is why the song that I sang was one called like a double entendre. So it speaks to one thing but it denotes another. And so mine was about my other senses and that how my other senses were working, and they were observing a lot of other things that were happening. And then one of the big things that was happening was the issue with the Democratic Labour Party with Ralph Thorne, and who was then the leader of the opposition and stuff like that. But I went and did a part of it. I wrote the third verse, and I made mention of an issue that was being faced by people with disabilities and stuff, with the electric buses and stuff like that. So I think that went well. For some people, they said that it probably was not a calypso for Jiggity Crop, but the judges thought differently. So I guess that is the reason why I was given a part or place in the finals.
Okay. Right. Do you think that Calypso in Barbados right now still carry the same challenge to uplift, inspire, and educate the masses?
Yes. And as you would know, if you have the history of Calypso, it was originated like from in Africa when the slaves came down here, and they would write and they would sing about things that were affecting them. So actually, Calypso is and Calypsonian is the voice for the masses, those people who probably can't speak for themselves or they are scared to come out and say certain things. So with Calypso, we capitalize on that, and then we sing about them and bring the message to the wider public.
Okay. Now, as a blind performer, what are some of the unique challenges that you have faced being on stage, and how do you think you can rise or have risen above them?
Well, for me, as one who is blind, definitely you will have challenges. Some people seem to feel that when you are on the stage that you have to run from the length and the breadth of the stage. And as you may know or aware of Calypsonians, even in Trinidad, that sang stood up in front of the mic and sing without moving a step to the left or one to the right, and have won Calypso crowns. But for me, I am the type of person that I don't like to keep still. So so I feel led to move on the stage, so I get things that can help me for my guidance to move on the stage and so on. I can tell you that last year, what I would say one of my biggest challenge was that the system that I used to navigate the stage, along with the amount of noise that was in front of me, those horns that were blowing. Imagine you cannot see, and you're, and the loud noises in front of you were very distracting. So those are some of the challenges. I feel that the people who were blowing the horns could tone them down or give me the opportunity to sing, so that, because I had to be coordinating, trying to remember my lyrics, how to maneuver on the stage, and things to that effect. So it was very, very challenging in that way.
Yes, I think many people do not appreciate or understand fully how noise level impacts the blind or visually impaired person.
To make it very disoriented.
Yes. So, Granville, can you tell us about one standout moment for you last year during the finals, whether on stage or behind the scenes?
Well, what I would say is that I felt really, really great last year because there were a lot of persons out there that were hailing for me, that were supporting me, and that made me feel very, very, very good. I guess there were some who felt differently, but I didn't mind that.
Okay. So now let's transition now to you as a leader within the disability community. Mm-hmm. And you are president of the National United Society of the Blind, an advocacy group. But generally, advocacy, accessibility, both at the built environment and for information and the use of some of these services that are provided for us.
Mm-hmm.
So how does your work as an advocate influence the work that you do in terms of your writing your calypsos or even generating the type of music you want for your calypsos?
Well, I think that, as I said, I don't always write for myself. Sometimes I seek other professional help in relation to persons out there that were writing for themselves for a long time. But then anybody writes for me, I still play a part in it, because at the end of the day, if I'm singing a song, I have to make it become mine. So I could make certain alterations. Maybe I can pick out a line from here and put one there that I think will be more fitting and stuff like that. So those are some of the things that I would do in order to help to enhance it, even if it's a with the melody and stuff like that. That's the route that I go.
Okay. And if it is one thing that you would want to have change immediately to improve the quality of life for blind and visually impaired persons in Barbados, what would it be?
If there's one thing that I would like change to improve, see, that would improve the life of people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if I should say that it should be is one thing. It's kind of hard for me to try to make one become mission critical.
Okay, well, give us at least 3 days.
I cannot see, but I am able to still get on a bus. It's not difficult for me. But I care more about the people who are wheelchair users, and it's very, very difficult for them. So that's one of the things that I would like to see improve. Transportation, it's a must. Transportation, and for us as people who are blind, I would like to see, although I sat on the advisory committee and certain things were put in place, these things still take some time before they are implemented. So I think that, like, things like being able to utilize the ATM machines and stuff like that, that would be a number two for me. And then number three would be to make, I know we are talking about a country that one day will be free from fossil fuels. And even though that electrical vehicles are coming on stream faster, it poses great danger for persons like myself. I would like to see some form of sound put on the vehicles, because if you can't see to cross and then you are crossing and you can't hear a vehicle coming, it could be dangerous for you. So those are some of the mission critical things that I would like to see happen in relation to transportation, being able to access ATM machine websites and those sort of stuff.
Okay. So, Granville, you, as we said before, have been an advocate for people with disabilities and still is advocating on behalf of people with disabilities in Barbados. What has this experience been like as an advocate, as a leader, you know, being on various advisory boards and committees to speak to the whole issue of disability and what more can be done and needs to be done to build a more inclusive society? What has that experience really been like?
It has been a journey, and although you try to get individuals like from the, whether it's governmental, whether it's is the private sector, to start using a bit more empathy and to put themselves in our shoes, to really try to understand what we are going through. And if people would, you know, feel how we feel, and, you know, I think that that would help to change what is happening. Even in society, I believe that people are adapting to our needs. Like, for instance, only this evening, I went into town. And when I was leaving town, two young ladies came and assisted me. Not that I could not do it by myself, but two young ladies came and assisted me. And I stopped into the $3 store. I bought something there, and they made sure they took me there and then said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to the supermarket." And they took me into the supermarket. I said to them, "I'm going to get somebody in the supermarket to help me." And you know, these two young ladies went and they picked, helped me to take my items, and then took me to the cash register and made sure that I got on the van to get home. So I think society is changing. And once society changes, I think it will do good for people with disabilities.
I believe so, because that level of caring I myself have experienced and still do experience, you know, where individuals genuinely seek to assist you and give you support. And for all the years that I have known you, Granville, you have been a very independent man navigating Bridgetown and so many other areas of Barbados.
Of course.
On using your white cane.
Yes.
I salute my hat to you.
I don't wait on nobody. I don't wait on nobody. Once I know that, even if I don't, I'm not so sure about where I'm going. Once I have my cane, I will get there. Trust me.
Quite agree. So, Granville, as you reflect, as you look back, I know that you are a family man. You have children. How would you say that journey has been as a father to your children? What was that experience like, you raising up your children, because now they're young adults?
Yep. Well, I tried my best and made sure there were times that I, even with my disability, I was not able to like pull in the amount of money that I want. I would sit down, I would talk to my children, I would say to them, "No, listen, you know, daddy cannot see well, and daddy doesn't have a bank job, or a job in government or whatever. So daddy has limited finances. So there were things that my children probably would have wanted that I could not afford to give them, but I gave them the things that they needed. And I tell them, look, all the things that I cannot afford to give you, I want you all to make sure that they got an education. And now my children are grown and they are all working for themselves. And they now can. I don't beg my children for anything. I don't ask my children for anything. If they see it fit that they want to make a contribution in my life, they would. But I don't ask my children for anything. Little that the Lord has given to me, I make it do. And I tell my children, take your money, spend it on yourself. All the things that I probably could not have given you when you were growing up, you get the things, those things now. And that's what they do.
Right.
They are comfortable, and I'm comfortable.
Great, great. So, Granville, what would you say has been one of your proudest moments, whether it's in the Calypso field, in your family life, in your advocacy work? Tell me some of your proud moments.
Well, some of my proudest moments is that I've lived to see that both my children, they're working for themselves. And for me, that I don't really have to give them anything. If they want anything, I can afford it, I will give them. But I am happy to know that I have brought up my children in, like the Bible says, to bring up a child in the way it should go, and when he get an old, he will not depart from it. And I am proud, I'm a proud father to say that my children, I didn't have to spend money in the court to bail them out from here or there, and they have grown and they're making life for themselves. And that's a proud mo moment for me. A proud moment in my life is that I try hard to continue to let God be an integral part in my life. And that's what I would say that I am very, very, very proud about.
Okay. As a Calypsonian, as an advocate, as a father, as a family man, as a son, you have many platforms where you can help to guide and inspire other persons, including people who are blind and visually impaired. How do you think you can do that, or how have you been able to do that?
Okay, how I've been able to do it is that in relation to Calypso, I continue to be among the average sighted person, and I compete with them, and to prove to them that even though that I am blind, that I am still capable. And I remember that even getting into the finals has proven that disability is not inability. And there were some of the big guns that did not get in, and I got in. I utilize my platform as an advocate that when persons become blind and they decide to stay in their homes and don't come out, I was able to visit them, to talk with them, and to show them my way of life, and to let them know that blindness is not the end of the world. That is something that if you become blind, that there's a slogan that says there's life after blindness, and that you can come out and you can start to live again. I've shown them that I was able to utilize the computer. I can utilize my cell phone, and effectively, I can utilize my phone sometimes even better than the average sighted person. And they marvel at how I get it done as a blind person. And you know, when people see your ability to do things, like even in like occult, so, and there's an average sighted person out there that would never do it, and I am doing it, so that's encouragement. And I want to also encourage my blind and visually impaired persons, because even this year we are trying to resuscitate our Calypso competition, and I hope that some of the other blind persons, I know they probably are scared of me because they feel that I'm a professional, but I'm not any professional. I just go there and do what I have to do. So in any area that I can try to motivate my people, I tell them, look, don't feel scared. I go into the kitchen, I cook, I bake, I do all kinds of things. To show them that life has to go on. And if life has to go on, then you have to make it happen. So you just can't sit down in your house and decide that you're not doing anything. You have to get up and get. That's my
well
philosophy.
Said. Well said, Granville. Yes. Life goes on. So yes. Even though you lose your vision, you lose a limb, you still have to continue living.
Exactly. And
just, I think for me, one of my attitudes is to simply enjoy my life.
Exactly.
You know? So what's next for you, Granville? What's next when it comes to your Calypso arena, when it comes to your advocacy work? What's next?
Well, what's next? What is next? For me, what is next is that I don't want to stay at the same stage. I want to creep and creep and creep. And one day, as my song says this year, one day I'm going to win the Calypso Prong too. And that is not an impossibility.
No, it's not.
It's not an impossibility. So I'm working towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to encourage other persons to see like what I am seeing, and be motivated to do more than they are doing right now.
Great.
I want to really be that person that one day I go into the bank and call the manager and say, listen, the time has come that you gotta get this ATM machine fixed that I can use it like anybody else. I go into the bank and I fight with them and I tell them, you can't make me pay the money over the counter until if you don't want me to pay money over the counter, then you gotta get the ATM machine working that I could go and utilize it like the average sighted person. So you can't take the money from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I get back my money too. So we have to fight for our rights and to make these people understand that the same things that we, that the average able-bodied person need, we need them too.
Of course, of course. Well, it's all about being able to adjust with our blindness, function to the highest capacity that we can, and really lead and live a fulfilling life.
And so, normal life.
Yes. So, Granville, I want to say thank you so much for sharing with us today about your Calypso life, your advocacy life, your family life, and just being a proud Barbadian. Thank you
so very
much for all the work you have done.
It has been my pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby, and my special guest, Granville Carter, Mr. DJ himself. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269. 9660 or 1246-430-7300. You can email me, visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can check this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. So until next week, please love yourself and love your neighbor just as much as you love yourself. Until then.